Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, September 27th, 2013, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kacharovich, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals Corp., your gold and silver bullion dealer. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com. Our phone number is 800-649-6722. And for those of you that would like to send us a question, our email address is mail@centralmetalscorp.com. We also have available for any of you that want to join us online, you can call in at 714-364-4707. Just to give you a couple quotes here on the pulse of the market, I guess, we have the gold is down $1.09 at $13.2377. Silver is at $21.85. The S&P is at $16.92. It's down about 6.7 points. The Dow Jones is at 15,260, and crude oil is still above 100. It's at 103.57. Crude oil has been over 100 now for, I think, almost 3 months, so it's holding strong. I don't know if it's topping out here or not, but crude oil is usually a good indicator of the market. We have a question from a regular listener, George from Ontario. But before we get to the question, we'd like to bring in our regular co-host, Jeff Dunphy from Calgary. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bosco. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Delighted to be here, Bosco. The world, and the nonsense that is unfolding before our very eyes is always an interesting topic for both Bosco and I. And we have more expose today than we have in the past, and consequently looking forward to sharing it with you.
Yeah, well, we're digging through the news on the internet and papers and so on, but let's get to George's question here. George is a regular contributor to the show. He asks a lot of good questions. He's a regular listener. And it's a two-part question, Jeff, so let's get to the first part here. He'd like to ask your opinion on the signing of the upcoming EU treaty by our Prime Minister, basically allowing the banksters even more control over our country's finances. He's referring to Canada, of course. Is treason being committed here in signing such a deal, and what effects would this have on the gold and its paper price? The second part of the question... last, he understands that there is a shortfall in the physical metals soon to hit the market. If demand continues at the existing global pace, how effective would silver be as an alternative hedge? So let's, Jeff, if you'd like to address George's first part of the question regarding the EU treaty and Canada, what do you make of that?
Okay, I'm a bit, I trust that this is going to directly address it, but if not, George, let us know. I think he may be making reference to the Cyprus-style bail-ins that the Canadian government is sort of trying to put into place, which give, the Economic Action Plan of 2013, and it's on pages 144 and 145 that they are going to implement a bail-in regime for systemically important banks. So effectively what's happened is the banks in Canada have now said to the government, help us out, keep us safe, and allow us to continue operating in a fashion that enriches all of us, and let the government and let the savers in the country bail us out when we fail. This is a bail-in versus a bail-out. A bail-out, ladies and gentlemen, as you will remember, was one that said the government will print money to save your sorry wanker asses because you have done silly economic things. A bail-in is the government won't print money anymore because they've found that it hasn't been as effective as they would have wanted it to be. So now what they're going to do is confiscate or steal your money in the bank in order to make sure they're safe and sound. Sounds a bit ugly and a bit nasty. George, I trust that addresses that issue. Now, the next issue, or the next part of that question, is the shortfall of physical metals and how it will change the price of gold and silver. And here is another aspect of the manipulation of the commodities and the difference between the gold price and the price of gold. One of the things that presents itself often that we, Bosco and I, have chatted about is how you go, if you went to Singapore or you went to Shanghai or you went to Hong Kong and you tried to buy physical gold, would it be different than the actual price of gold on the screen when it talks about paper gold? And this is where the manipulators specifically, and namely the JP Morgans of the world, have been tasked with or accused of manipulating, and how the regulators don't want to make a big fuss about it because the regulators and JP Morgan are in bed together. So the issue at hand is the price of physical gold is higher than the price of paper gold. This is a given. This is something that we can observe, and this is where you go onto the web and you can find all kinds of articles about this fact. To the tune of silver prices, the physical price of silver sometimes gets as much as 20% higher than the actual. Physical price of gold gets, 5 or 10 or 15% higher than the price of gold, which I've actually experienced when I went in to buy silver with Bosco. Here's what's up for physical and here's what's up for paper. So that being said, it cannot help but drive the price of gold and silver up. And as one of the bloggers, a very, very famous blogger on the web, would say, we are about to witness the emancipation of gold and silver. The addendum to that, George, would be this. One of the things that has happened and continues to happen is we see a movement of physical gold from North America to Asia, predominantly Shanghai and Hong Kong. And I think we've seen a huge extrication of the physical metal from North America to Hong Kong. And consequently, that should give all of us great consternation in terms of what Bosco and I have been talking about for months in terms of manipulation and the shorting and the JP Morgans of the world. And also owning physical gold in order to facilitate the security of your wealth, securing your wealth, as opposed to having it confiscated by a government, stealing your bank accounts, and having it confiscated by a government, devaluing your currency to such a point that the paper money that you have is useless. What do you think, Bosco?
No, I agree. There's definitely planning taking place to move the physical, I believe, and even the paper market into Asia. We've had over the past couple years the introduction of the Shanghai Futures Exchange. They created a gold and silver contract. We have one coming up. Singapore is also interested in having one. And from my sources inside the vault industry, there is a lot of action right now in Hong Kong where gold moving from the West through Hong Kong and into China is definitely on the uptrend. So, I mean, folks, it's really not that hard to figure out. You look at which country or which area of the world is holding majority of the U.S. debt, and it leads you straight over to Asia. So those people that are holding the U.S. debt, and if they see what's happening in the U.S., as was evidenced last week when Chairman Bernanke announced that there will be no tapering, that means money printing is coming, and it's going to be, staying the course. And the result of that is a loss of purchasing power. So these Asian nations are looking to protect themselves, and they're looking for other assets around the world, commodity assets mostly. I think we discussed it before, Jeff, that there's a lot of people from China looking into Canada to get into the energy markets. I know you're familiar with that. But, yeah, and silver, you know, silver is one of those metals that, you know, when you look at the big picture, it's the only metal that is still way below its all-time high. You know, gold and platinum and copper, they've all broken their 1980 high, for example, and silver is still practically 50% below. And in this day and age when technology is king pretty much, silver is included in everybody's iPhone and smartphone and laptop and so on. So, you know, and actually we have some clients that are doctors, and they tell me that they're starting to recognize more and more silver being used in the medical industry for different things like medical tools and medical applications and so on. So I think there's definitely a fundamental demand for silver is there. Once we can work out the paper price shenanigans, then I think it's going to be off to the races. And I don't know if we mentioned before, but the some of the news that I believe came out this week, the CFTC closed their investigation on silver manipulation. That was sent out actually just a couple days ago on the 25th. I don't know if you had a chance to catch that, Jeff. But
absolutely.
Yeah. So they.
Well, here again is an example, Bosco, as you've said, and as I will continue to say, is the fox in the hen house. The regulators don't want to miss their cushy jobs inside the banks because the banks make reference to and infer, hey, when you're done here working in the government during this term, you want to come across the street and work for us. So consequently, they tend to turn a blind eye. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I want to rant about, as I am wont to do, Bosco, is a couple of articles and a whistleblowing venue that speaks to all of this, of the powers that be and how this plays out. But before we do that, one of George's questions, I want to further elaborate on the bail-in. That's the government going after people's savings in order to facilitate their banking industry. So we're having it done in Poland. On Wednesday, they're going to transfer to the state many of the assets held by private pension funds. So they're actually going after the pension funds because that's where it's easy money to find, as you and I have said, Bosco, because they know where all those pension funds are because they're registered. They're taking private assets away from them without offering any compensation. That's theft. Iceland, some years ago in 08, Iceland said, okay, fine, we're going to let the banks go bankrupt. We're going to let them go bust, which is how the normal economic model of democracy and capitalism works. A bank makes stupid decisions, Bosco. It has to fall on its sword. It goes bankrupt. It goes insolvent. Its owners and its bondholders and all that don't get anything as a result of the bank's silliness, as opposed to running to the government saying, please help us, and the government printing money or stealing other people's money in order to keep the bank safe, which makes it even crazier. So the Icelandic system right now, I think perhaps, Bosco, this is food for thought, as a result of them allowing all these banks to go bankrupt, if they need any other help, the international banking community is, yeah, you're going to have to go after your savings accounts in Iceland. So that's come up. The European venue right now is, we now have Angela Merkel back in power, Bosco, which gives the Germans comfort because she is keen on austerity, but it also starts to raise the rankle of the interrelationship between Germany and the U.S. You will remember, ladies and gentlemen, that Germany said to the U.S., we want to repatriate our gold, and the Americans went, yeah, well, how does 7 years sound? We'll give it to you in 7 years. Go into a bit of that research makes the hair in your nose curl, Bosco. Yeah. We also have Italy. We have the Italian bank called the Monte Paschi. It is in the throat. It's one of the oldest banks in Italy. I'm sure it has great ties with the Vatican, and it is probably the most insolvent, and they're now talking about, they've just declared, Bosco, that they're not going to pay any interest on 481 million euros of outstanding hybrid notes. Now, these hybrid notes were, ladies and gentlemen, created so that there was really no discourse or no recourse on the notes. Bosco, if you fail your mortgage payment, the bank comes over after you and says, I am going to take the house. And the legal system says, go take the house. Well, these notes, under the terms of the updated notes, the Siena, Italy-based lender is allowed to suspend interest without defaulting and doesn't have to make up the missed coupons when payment resumes. There's a good kind of death, eh, Bosco? Would you like to have a mortgage, Bosco, that said, yeah, Bank of Montreal, I'm not going to pay for the next few months. And the bank goes, okay, well, under the terms of our agreement, you don't have to. Don't worry about it. Everything's cool. That's the kind of debt I'd like to have. And then there's New Zealand, not only the Canada. The national government are pushing sort of for a Cyprus-style solution to bank failures by telling them that some of their savings funds will be subject to bailing out the banks. So we have that. Now I want to sort of segue into the powers that be taking care of themselves and the powers that be manipulating the system to their own agenda. And we now hearken to a woman named Karen Hughes, which is spelled H-U-D-E-S, as opposed to H-U-G-H-E-S. She was a central banker, and she just like our guest some time ago, Bosco, Paul Craig Roberts, who corroborates all of Karen's observations. She's an economist and a lawyer, a Yale lawyer. She's in securities, and she was 8 years with the Export-Import Bank of the U.S., and then she was 21 years inside the World Bank. Mm-hmm. Now, some of this observation is what you and I've suggested, Bosco, is that perhaps some of the people inside these great institutions who have conscience and who have a distaste for the manipulation that's going on may sort of stand up one day and go, I can't, in good conscience, I can't do this anymore. I have to step out and tell the truth. And I would trust that this is the case with Karen. Now, I want to wander through what she had to say in a moment, but one of the things that she also made reference to, and our good friend George, who has been very gracious in his contributions to questions and the like, she made reference to and sent along a paper. It's a 36-page economic paper, which is full of good old economic terms and charts and the like. However, very well written and also very bold in terms of the light of the current manipulations of the powers that be. Now, Bosco, the paper is called The Network of Global Corporate Control. And it talks about how they would go about figuring out how all these big banks are interconnected. Now, intuitively, Bosco, we know that this is the case, and certainly we read about it, we see headlines about it, we see collusion all over the place, we see price fixing, we see LIBOR nonsense, but one of the things that comes out of this paper is a methodic, largely quantitative approach to how they best organize and collude in order to manipulate inflows and outflows of money, of power, of direction. Now, the other thing that comes to light in this paper, George and Bosco, is this is some of the stuff I used to do. I used to create corporate structures so that individuals wouldn't necessarily have to own a vast majority of a company in order to exhibit control over it. So this is something I know just a little about because I've set them up on more than one occasion. Mm-hmm. So what they did is, in terms of their study size, is they identified what they called transnational corporations, powerful transnational corporations. And they evaluated, Bosco, somewhere in the tune of 30,000 or 40,000 of them. Okay? So it's a complex network analysis. Okay? So they evaluated and identified the ownership and the control of them. And generally, ladies and gentlemen, in the securities law and also in the evaluation of the regulators, they assume control as more than 51%, and then they assume minor control or suasion, if you will, as more than, I believe it's more than 30 or 33%, a third. Now, that being said, what they did, and this is a very comprehensive study, happy to share it with you, what they did is they tried to figure out how each shareholder would exercise their control and what they would do with the money that flowed to and in and around them. And further to a conversation that Bosco and I have had previously, we would say, okay, Bosco, once you have a billion or 10 billion or 50 billion, what next do you want to do? And the logical conclusion on that is, well, lets exhibit or exert control over various things, because you can only buy so many cars, Bosco. I mean, Bosco, mm-hmm. you got what, 100, 200, 300 cars? I mean, you know, you get to drive a car a day with your massive wealth, right? So you aren't buying any more cars, are you? Because you own them all. Well, there's the Jerry Seinfeld school of thought. Jerry Seinfeld bought a parking lot in New York to house all of his cars because he had 100 of them or 200. He doesn't buy cars anymore, ladies and gentlemen, because he has them all. So once you have billions and possibly access to trillions, what do you want to do? You want to exhibit control. So here's the numbers, Bosco. They started with a list of 43,000 transnational corporations, okay? And this network included 600,000 of interconnectivities and 1 million ownership ties. There's a comprehensive study, eh, Bosco?
Wow.
And what they did is they did some very interesting work, and I'm going to jump to the punchline, right? I would bid you look at this, and it's written by Stefania Vitali, James Glatfelder, and Stefano Battiston, okay? But I'm going to jump to the punchline, Bosco, because it's very interesting, and it sort of lends into what you and I have been ranting about for months.
Okay, Jeff, before you do that, could you give our listeners the title of that document in case anybody wants to search for it online? And
absolutely, and it is, I think I just said, is The Network of Global Corporate Control by Stefania Vitali, James Glatfelder, and Stefano Battiston.
Okay.
A Network of Global Corporate Control. So the network topology, one of the things they come up with is, in other words, there is a tightly knit group of corporations that cumulatively hold the majority share of each other. This we would call, Bosco, historically, cross-pollinization. We would also call it nepotism, perhaps, right, Bosco? This is something I used to do for people. People used to come into my office and say, I only have $5 million, but I need to control this $100 million company. Can you show me how to do it? And I did. Mm-hmm. So the concentration of control, okay? So I'm going to read some quotes from this, Bosco, because I think they've, in typical economic parlance, sometimes economic papers can be quite dry. But this actually has some very germane and very well-written sentences in it. Although scholars have long measured the concentration of wealth and income, there is no prior quantitative estimation for control. Okay? So the top holders holding cumulatively 80% of the total network control. Okay? So here's there's some unbelievable, in particular the top ranked actors hold a control 10 times bigger than what could be expected based on their wealth. What I just said, Bosco, how do I spend $3 million or $5 million or $10 million to control a $100 million company? So the top ranked actors hold a control 10 times bigger than could be expected they would control based on their wealth. The results are robust with respect to the models used to estimate control. So now we'll get into the discussion, the last couple of pages of this, which makes you blanch, Bosco, but also really does confirm what we've been pointing out in terms of the powers to be. In detail, nearly 4/10 of the control over the economic value of these transnational corporations in the world is held via a complicated web of ownership relations by a group of 147 transnational corporations in the core. That's out of 60,000, 147
wow.
out of 60,000, which has almost full control. So, which has almost full control over itself. The top holders within the core can thus be thought of as an economic superentity in the global network of corporations. A relevant additional fact at this point is that 3/4 of the core, 3/4 of the powers that be, are financial intermediaries. They're banks, Bosco.
Yep.
Which is what we've been saying all along, but what's nice is that this stuff comes to light, right?
Yep.
So then, you know, it goes on further. Firstly, what are the implications for global financial stability? Now, the implication here is that in good times, the network is seemingly robust because everybody's making a bunch of money, but if one of their pegs falls out, if one of their wheels falls out, if they have 100 wheels, if they are a centipede, they lose a leg and it's not a big deal. But when there's so few of them, when one of the wheels falls off one of them, the network is, while it's seemingly robust in good times, in bad times, firms go into distress simultaneously. When somebody sneezes, everybody catches a cold. And the second implication of the study, Bosco, is what are the implications for market competition? When everybody is pulling on their own oars in order to facilitate stuff, it gives me, as it should everybody else, great pause as opposed to this, right? So we conjecture that it may be present in other types of networks where rich get richer mechanisms are at work. However, the fact that the core is so densely connected could be seen as a generalization of the rich club phenomena. Okay, Bosco, that's the paper in very, very abridged version, and I would suggest that those who want to read it go and find it, because it's there and it's around. And it also brings us back to what Karen Hughes has been saying, in that the monetary system is broken. Gold and silver-backed monetary systems are a sound modality. Monetary systems that have gone off a commodity backing have all collapsed. Not just some of them, Bosco. Every one of them has collapsed over time. So consequently, it's not a function of if it will collapse, Bosco. It's a function of when. And what we see in the taper fake-out, which was pointed out, that the Fed is worried about the fact that the economy is in the throes of collapsing, and what it's doing in order to stop that from happening, prevent it from happening, making people look the other way, is not working. So now what they're trying to figure out how to do is, well, maybe we'll have to keep printing money and go steal people's money in the bank. Ouch.
Mm-hmm.
So what the implication on that is that they are not going to taper, which is what happens. The debt ceiling issue is coming to light again. That, ladies and gentlemen, if you recall, is that the American economy is allowed to borrow 100 units of money. And then when it gets close to borrowing that 100 units of money, they go back to the Senate and the Congress and say, we need to borrow more. And everybody goes, oh, phooey, 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 okay, very well, way to go. Well, there's certain aspects of the Senate and the Congress who are saying, no, you cannot borrow any more money, which is kind of like having a credit card and you ordering more stuff on your credit card and having the company, L.L. Bean, say, yeah, no, sorry, you can't have any because your credit card was declined.
Hmm.
So there's the implication is, could Obama execute, by executive action, just increase the debt ceiling by himself, kind of veto their power? And there's a possibility. Even Bill Clinton made reference to that the other day when he said, I would do it and let them sort it out in the courts, but at least you can pay the bills for the time being. The implications of American economy not being able to pay its bills get a little egregious, if you will, right? And we also have the Chinese taking all the gold, the physical gold, and we have the disconnect between the price of gold and the price of paper gold and the price of physical gold. So I don't know, Bosco. There's lots and lots of the stuff that we've been talking about. So does it seem like it's coming to a head? Does it seem like there's all of these things that we've been talking about? I don't want to say this by patting ourselves on the back, ladies and gentlemen, but we've been talking about this for a while. It's unfortunate that it is happening, but boy, haven't we been talking about it for a while?
Oh, yeah, Jeff, definitely. No, I mean, you know, we're here to try and, you know, offer a different opinion than the mainstream media and hopefully get people to wake up to a different a way of looking at your wealth. And you know, folks, I know I said this before, but, you know, if you read history, I think, you know, it gives you a better idea of what's to come, because this is the same playbook that they've always used. Every empire, that when they're going through the process of collapsing, you know, governments go haywire, and money is the value of money is the victim. And connected to that, of course, is your standard of living. So this is not the first time, you know, in the Roman Empire, the coins that they used, instead of they were silver or gold, they cut or reduced the amount of actual physical gold and silver in the coins, which is
salted.
Essentially inflationary in that way. It's reducing the value of your money. And typically, folks, what governments do, or not any government, any empire, when they get into these situations, they go after the money and they go after their citizens. So, and just in an article that I just printed out this morning from Rolling Stone magazine, Matt Taibbi wrote a piece on looting the pension funds. Okay, I haven't had a chance to read through it yet, but what's happening, as we discussed before on this program, what's going on in Detroit, you know, when these city governments and so on and state governments losing control, they're going to go after the pensions. You're not going to receive the pension that you were promised. The value of your standard of living and your money is going to decline. Okay, and the government is going to come up with some excuse, you know, that it's somebody else's fault that we're going through this. They are going to create some boogeyman that, whether it be another country or some other natural disaster or something, they're going to create some excuse, some scapegoat that is going to take the blame for this, but it's not going to be the government and the financial system. This is the playbook. This is what they've done throughout history. So, folks, it's time to wake up and take action. And the key word is action, to protect yourself. Historically, Jeff and I agree, and we've done the research. Gold and silver is one of the assets or monetary assets that acts as a very good store of wealth. To protect the value of your assets, it offers insurance, and mostly it's insurance. But I think you are going to be benefit greatly from owning gold and silver. And this is what people need to do. I know that we discussed other ways to protect yourself. For those of you that aren't able to buy gold, okay, you can buy silver. If you don't have funds to buy either, you know, just having food storage or having a garden or, you know, reducing your exposure in the financial markets is another thing. But governments are going to go after, it looks to me like they're going to go after the pensions, even, you know, Social Security in the U.S. and all that. You know, they are going to replace, just like what happened in Cyprus, they replaced people's deposits with bank shares. So the government here is going to replace your pension with government bonds that are going to return, you know, 0.5% if you're lucky, a year. And meanwhile, while all this is going on, you're going to experience high inflation. So the cost of living is going to go up. And, you know, the only way to protect yourself is to get assets out of the financial system, into gold and silver, and hope for the best. I mean, hopefully Karen Hudes can maybe create a stir and get people to start bringing things back to normal. I hope that it's not too late.
I want to chat a little about our collective obligation to pay attention. I think one of the things that became quite readily apparent in the expose on what happened with the country of Germany during the Second World War was a whole bunch of them sort of turned a blind eye. And one of the things, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to do is we'd like to encourage you as listeners to contribute your thoughts to this. We've got some very sound, very mindful observations from time to time, but we would like you to contribute. But we'd also like to perhaps indulge in the thought that is it in your best interest to sit idly by and allow the powers that be to do this? Now, we aren't suggesting taking up arms and going and starting violently, but I think what we're suggesting that you do is identify that the system is not necessarily working in your best interests, recognize that the system is now organizing itself to protect itself, not you. It does not. Its agenda for its own self-protection and self-preservation is contrary to what is in your best interests. And I think we've seen that blindly or blindingly clear, as we are wont to say with the great phrase, a blind man on a galloping horse could see that the banking system and the politicians are not in this for you. Okay, so I think we need to be mindful of many things. The fact that every email you're saying, many of these blogs are being listened to and recorded. Your security and your privacy has been violated in with big bold letters. They're all saying, oh yes, we are monitoring everything that is being said and done. It behooves you to actually take that to heart. Don't turn a blind eye. I think it does behoove you to be ever mindful about your own wealth security, being just like it is to be mindful about your physical security. Would you sleep out in the rain or snow? And, you know, I think that's kind of a silly question, but would you rest comfortably when you know that the government is taking action to confiscate your wealth? Bosco, I wouldn't. I don't think anybody else would either. So there's now no end of opportunity to identify and see that people from inside organizations. This Karen Hughes was from the World Bank. I mean, she worked for the legal department. She was there for 21 years. And mm-hmm. she started to say, okay, I was party to and privy to a whole bunch of these conversations. And you know what? It's interesting that we're seeing more and more of this. We're seeing more and more of this stuff that said, remember the J.P. Morgan guy that came out and started whistleblowing on the manipulation of silver and gold? Yep. Mm-hmm. This is happening, Bosco. This is happening. So the central bank's currency wars, which we've highlighted previously, the fact that there's been manipulation, the fact that there's a disconnect between paper gold and silver prices and physical gold and silver prices, that's brutal. The fact that Germany is now starting to say to the U.S., what do you mean you aren't going to give us back our gold? Yeah. It's time to pay attention. And we would like to, again, encourage listeners to contribute, pitch up, tell us, ask us questions, see if there is something that we would that we can shed some light on in your way. And please do not stand idly by and say, well, there's nothing that I can do. This is not a time to do that. Because one of the things that happens, one of the things that comes to light when I do this investigation, Bosco, is years ago there would be in the death march of Bataan, in the atrocities that happened in the concentration camps in Germany, you'd have one guy with one rifle that had three bullets in it, and he would be shepherding along a line of 100 or 200 prisoners, and the 100 or 200 prisoners would just be going idly along. When all 10 had to do was rush him, one might have been shot and killed, but one might have been shot and injured, and there is a place to stand up to not being manipulated, and that is passively, not necessarily aggressively. Again, we aren't suggesting taking up arms, but we're suggesting mitigate your exposure to the financial system. The system itself, the banking system, is not your friend. Take action so when it becomes your confiscator, when it starts to steal stuff from you, what it can steal from you is immaterial relative to your lifestyle and your self-reliance. And open up, wake up, please pay attention to this. There's too much to be lost, right?
Right. Folks, so anyone who wants to ask a question, you're welcome to email us at mail@centralmetalscorp.com. Jeff as well can be reached. Jeff, your email address?
It's viadao, V-I-A-T-A-O, @gmail.com. And happy to receive these emails, and quite delighted with some of the emails we have been receiving of late. And it also, I think, it's potentially showing that what we are ranting and raving about, Bosco, is having an effect. We're opening some people's eyes, because that's what we're in this for. We don't do this for...
Yeah. Right, no, and I'd just like to remind our listeners, you know, I'm in the gold and silver business, and Jeff and I do this program. It's mostly for you. Jeff has a vast experience. I know he doesn't talk about it much, but I'm going to let you know, you know, he's been in the securities business for many decades. He understands the corporate world. He understands the economics behind it. And he comes on this program of his own goodwill. So, folks, you know, use Jeff as a resource. He's very knowledgeable about many things, not only in finance. And email him and ask him any questions. I'm sure, you know, he could respond or at least direct you in the right way. Obviously, you know, this program is brought to you by my company, Central Metals Corp. But, you know, Jeff contributes here from his own goodwill, and we appreciate that, Jeff, very much. And I'd just like to let people know, I always get questions regarding, you know, getting into gold and silver. A lot of people have concerns about liquidity for some reason. You know, I was speaking to a gentleman the other day, and he's worried how you're going to sell it. What are you going to do with it after you buy it? Folks, you know, it's been publicly, displayed or categorized that gold is one of the most liquid assets in the world, along with cash, treasuries, government bonds, and so on. And gold is the only money that's been around for thousands of years and survived. So, you know, people have a question about liquidity. You know, you give me a call if you want to sell your gold. I can, and you have an account with us, I can book you a price on the spot, and you'll receive your funds in your account within a matter of 2 or 3 days. Just like any other investment account, when you call your broker, by the time they settle the trade and wire the funds or issue you a check, you're not going to actually see the money in your account for 2 to 3 days. So same thing applies with gold. And even if you want faster liquidation, you can come into my office. You can go to any local coin dealer or jeweler or whatever the case may be and sell your gold on the spot and receive cash for it. So gold is one of the most liquid assets that exist. So, and another thing too, it's very private and there's no counterparty risk. So you don't have to worry about a brokerage firm or some entity going bankrupt. If you own the gold and it's in your possession, you know, you're fine. You can take it wherever you want and liquidate it. So, you know, again, I'd like to encourage people to, you know, send questions, email us. If there's a certain topic you'd like for us to discuss on the program, we're more than happy to do so. And, you know, again, I'd like to let people know to, you know, use Jeff as a resource. He has a lot of experience in the industry. And, Jeff, we appreciate your time on the program. And I think with that, we're gonna call it a wrap. And wish everyone a good weekend, and we look forward to seeing you next week, Jeff.
Thanks, Bosco. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing us to be of service to you. It behooves us to turn the lights on, and it also behooves us to reiterate, even though we sound like a broken record, it's important to be self-reliant. It's important to see things as they are rather than how others would tell you how to see things. And it's important to take care of you, yours, and your own. And it's important to not let the powers that be manipulate into doing things that are not in your best interests. And with that, Bosco, we will bid everyone adieu, and we will chat again next week.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Goodbye.